capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to the Level Talk programme. My name is John Harrison. The case for the prosecution of previous UK Prime Minister Tony Blair for leading the UK into the so-called Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2003 and the Iraqi War, together with the US, Australia and Poland, has come up a number of times, but each time the prosecution's case was turned down by the powers to be. In 2016, the International Criminal Court refused to launch a case against the previous Prime Minister, with the explanation that decisions regarding launching a conflict are outside its remit. A judge declared in November last year that Mr. Blair is actually immune from criminal prosecution. This month, Tony Blair is once again in the firing line. General Abdul Wahid Shanana Ribat, the former chief of staff of the Iraqi army, seeks the trial of Mr. Blair, together with the then former Secretary Jack Straw and the Attorney General at the time, Lord Goldsmith. General Shanana Ribat reportedly seeks their conviction for the crime of aggression based on the findings of the Chilcot report into the war. Now, the present UK Attorney Jeremy Wright, QC, is having none of this and will reportedly go to court, according to the Daily Telegraph, to demand that Tony Blair should not be prosecuted. Wright says that the case is hopeless because there is no such thing as a crime of aggression in English law, even though it does exist in international law. The case does not seem to be over, however, and Prime Minister Theresa May could now face questions over whether she approved moves to block the prosecution. To hopefully unravel this mess, I welcome to the programme former Labour MP Hugh Kerr. Welcome, Hugh. And Professor of Law Alfred De Zayas. Professor De Zayas is a retired senior lawyer with the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, also Secretary of the UN Human Rights Committee, Chief of the Petitions Department at OHCHR. Now, if I could ask both of you, please, the basic question. I mean, what exactly is the case for raising criminal charges against Blair? If both of you could please give us your answer to that in a few minutes. Professor Zayas.
Okay, let me remind the readers that not only the Chilcot inquiry decided or found that the war had been irregular, that it entailed an act of aggression, but my former boss, the Secretary General of the United Nations, repeatedly referred to the Iraq invasion of 2003 as an illegal war. And everybody remembers Bertrand Russell, and there is now the so-called Bertrand Russell Tribunal, also called the Brussels Tribunal, that has met on these issues. This is a people's tribunal. Mm-hmm. And they have found not only Tony Blair, but of course George W. Bush, guilty of the crime of aggression. More than the crime of aggression, we have to deal with the war crimes and the crimes against humanity that ensued. The problem with the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court is that initially, although Article 5 of the Rome Statute gives it jurisdiction over the crime of aggression, there was a little clause that would not exercise that right until there was a definition for purposes of the ICC statute. That definition was adopted in Kampala in 2010, but there was not supposed to have any retroactive effect, and as a matter of fact, the idea is that only for crimes of aggression committed after 2017 would the ICC in The Hague take jurisdiction. On the other hand, there is the concept of universal jurisdiction, meaning that any country can prosecute genocide, war crimes against humanity, even not committed on its territory, because of the special nature of these crimes. Not every country has universal jurisdiction legislation, but many do. And I think it would be about time that the United Kingdom has that kind of jurisdiction. On the other hand, it was the United Kingdom, it was the House of Lords that broke the mold back in 1999 when it disregarded the immunity of General Pinochet and said that a former head of state can well be indicted and prosecuted.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Zayas. Now, you've given us an awful lot of information. Now, Q, former Labour MEP, in plain English, what does that actually mean? Does this mean that we cannot, the British Parliament is safe, if you like it, Tony Blair is safe, rather, he cannot be brought to trial because Statute 5 was only added this year, apparently, and so on? What does this all mean in plain English?
I think in plain English means it's very unlikely that Blair will be tried for war crimes. I think the real case against Blair is a moral case, of course. And the moral case, which was brought out by various reports, in particular, obviously, Chilcot more recently, but the one that we all knew, actually, even way back in 2003, that in fact that we went to war on a pack of lies known as the weapons of mass destruction, which weren't there. They were a convenient fiction created by Blair and the Americans in order to justify what they all wanted to do all along, which was to invade both Iraq and Afghanistan, and consequently destabilize the whole of the Middle East. And that was the intention. It was a pretext. It was, in that sense, a crime morally, and probably a crime in terms of international law, certainly as Kofi Annan and subsequent UN General Secretaries have pointed out. There was no UN approval for it. There was no basis in international law. It was clearly an illegal act in that sense. And therefore, morally, and probably legally in international law, it's a war crime. But proving it and getting Blair to the court, given that the British state, both from Labour and Conservative, will be very clear that they don't want it to happen and the British Attorney General is taking all the steps to prevent it. I think it's unlikely that he will be prosecuted, certainly within British jurisdiction. Now, the interesting question is, if other countries don't observe this and aggression is an internationally accepted and applied, he could find it difficult travelling abroad, which would be very ironic given that Blair makes most of his money from going around the world advising governments on how to deal with regulation and governance and law. It's somewhat irony that this war criminal might be prevented from making the estimated £100 million he's made since he left Number 10.
Well, looking at this, all this summer distance and looking at, I know it's dangerous to take statements and facts and out of context and blow them up, you know, but I would like to perhaps try and make a case that Mr. Jeremy Wright, QC, is saying that aggression is a crime under customary international law, which automatically forms part of domestic law. But is it? I mean, he's a double talk, isn't it, Professor Zayas?
Well, we have here a culture of impunity, and it's not only in the United Kingdom, but it's also in the United States and elsewhere, where the philosophy is we don't commit war crimes, the others do.
Yeah.
I mean, we judge others for war crimes violations, but we are not subject to being judged. This is a psychological problem. It is the conviction, and very deep conviction, that we are, by definition, the good guys.
Yeah.
Has to be moved away from. It would be already a tremendous success if the image, if the reputation of Tony Blair and of George W. Bush were sufficiently destroyed in the media so that he no longer could be considered a suitable envoy for anything. I mean, it's someone who certainly, according to objective principles of international law, has committed the ultimate crime, as Robert Jackson called it at Nuremberg, which is the crime against peace. Because once you commit the crime against peace, the war crimes and the crimes against peace. And there's been a loss of life in Iraq of 1.5 million human beings that would not have died if we had not aggressed them. And there is a situation of chaos, of a humanitarian catastrophe, and ISIS, and everything has followed. And all of it is attributable to Tony Blair and to George W. Bush, and the connivance, unfortunately, of the so-called coalition of the willing. Because it is a scandal that democracies and millions of people went on the street to protest against this war in 2003, But the respective heads of government of the coalition of the willing dragged their peoples into an illegal war with the consequences that ensued. What I'd like to see also is reparation being paid by the United Kingdom, by the United States, to the Iraqi people for the enormous, enormous debt that we have cost them.
Yeah. I mean, the Attorney General is saying that he reserves the right to make other arguments as to why the attempted private prosecution should be stopped. You know, I mean, it sounds dictatorial.
Well, it sounds like when I learned international law at Harvard, basically I was taught how to win.
Yeah.
Every procedural loophole or every trick in the book in order not to, you know, in order to defend my client. So I think that the Attorney General should be to enable the implementation of international law and not to obstruct it.
But wait a minute, Professor Zeisler. I'd just like to point out to listeners, perhaps our listeners not aware, that America is not actually a member of the International Criminal Court. Is that correct?
Perfectly aware that the United States under Trump is not likely to adhere to the ICC. And when I think of the ICC, I see a very wounded institution, because for as long as it only indicts Africans, its credibility is very questionable, and it will only become a true international criminal court when it starts indicting major war criminals in the West.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, Hugh, I read also that Imran Khan, who's the lawyer for this general, Iraqi general, he kind of said, well, his client is baffled as to why it is that despite the Chilcot report making it very clear that the war was illegal, attempts are being made to prevent those responsible from entering a court, let alone being prosecuted for what they did. Now, in the UK, is there a kind of awareness of what is going on, or are people so sort of, you know, detached from all this stuff and the actual facts that they're not aware of it, or maybe just don't care?
Well, I think there's not a general awareness. Because the BBC and the major mass media don't tend to cover it. There are occasional stories in The Guardian and other liberal parts of the press about it. And, of course, yes, Iraqis doesn't apply equally, but, of course, the truth is that the rich have always got ways of avoiding the law, and the rich and the powerful have got ways of avoiding the law in Britain. And so, you know, Mr. Blair has rich friends who I'm sure will be doing his best to protect him under the various mechanisms that they find. Don't forget that Blair himself, you know, as Prime Minister, stopped the prosecution of illegal and bribes to the Saudis for arms sales, because it was against the national interest. And clearly it's against the national interest to have former prime ministers prosecuted. There is a club of former prime ministers, and they all agree the one thing is that they should never be held to account for any of the acts they've done, which might be illegal. So I'm afraid that I don't have a lot of faith in the British law and the British establishment, because, of course, the judges and the predominant political elite and the economic elite belong to the same class, and they tend to look after each other. So I think the Iraqi gentleman who is pressing the prosecution may be surprised, but the truth is that I'm not surprised. The truth is that the really important point is that Blair is now a toxic name in the moral calculus of the British people, and indeed internationally, because of his crimes, because of his war crimes. And that's the biggest judgment against them all. Would be nice to see him in court, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. Okay, let's carry on in a minute. Let's take a short break here.
Going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Programme. Today we're talking about the rather remarkable ability of previous British Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair to escape legal accountability for his decision to involve the UK in the US-Iraqi war in 2003. I'm joined by former Labour MEP Hugh Kerr, and Professor of Law Alfred de Zayas. Welcome back, everybody. Now, we just started talking about you said the rich, Hugh Kerr, don't sort of tend to get into that sort of trouble. We're talking about legal trouble at the ICC. But is it the rich or is it a power thing? Because my question, I suppose, to Professor Zayas would be, what precedent is there in the UK for a prime minister? You know, we don't do impeachment in the UK. We have different words. But what precedent is there for a British prime minister to actually be removed from office for war crimes?
None that I know.
None.
But there was a king called Charles I who had his head chopped off.
And, yeah, I know, but I'm not sure if it was because of war crime. That's the thing.
No. But again, concerning war crimes, and in particular torture, it is to the credit of the House of Lords that in 1999 they decided that the Convention Against Torture, and United Kingdom is a state party to this convention, obliged the United Kingdom to prosecute any person in its territory that had been accused of torture.
Yeah.
And we're talking of General Augusto Pinochet.
Yeah.
That was a milestone in the development of international criminal law, and that significantly weakened whatever claim to immunity that a former head of state would have. Following Pinochet, we know of Slobodan Milosevic, a former head of state. We know of Charles Taylor in Sierra Leone, and even sitting president of Sudan, al-Bashir, has no immunity and has been indicted in the ICC in The Hague, and there are actually two outstanding warrants for his arrest. So if British courts were to apply the Convention Against Torture and say torture was certainly committed in the Iraq war by British subjects, that is attributable to the head of state.
That is attributable to the head of state,
Therefore, there is responsibility and accountability on the part of Tony Blair. But what you need here is the political will and the independence of the judges and lawyers. And that is what I am questioning, to what extent the courts are willing to use their independence and say, so as the House of Lords decided in the Pinochet case in 99, we decide today, 2017, on Tony Blair.
I mean, it's serious, isn't it? Because if Blair, you know, doing the right thing, as he always said, actually, these programs are supposed to be balanced, okay? They're supposed to be the other voice as well. They said neither of you are prepared to defend Mr. Blair, but let me just say that he always said that I'm doing the right thing, okay? I'm convinced that I did the right thing, you know, in a sort of a good Christian way, you know. But whatever. I mean,
well, the same thing that George W. Bush continues to say.
Again,
let me quote one favorite authors, and that's Oscar Wilde. You are surely aware of his statement that as long as war is regarded as wicked, it will always have its fascination. When it is looked upon as vulgar, it will cease to be popular.
Right.
And the fact is that certainly the Iraq war has sold in the United States as you know, a nice little war in which, of course, the United States, you know, crushed Saddam Hussein, crushed the enemy. And there is this fascination about it. I mean, if the media were to show that the Iraq war was vulgar, that the Iraq war was a crime against humanity, and I mean the BBC, if you read Media Lens, you realize how much the BBC engaged in whitewashing and in apologetics for the Iraq war. That is one of the major problems. I mean, if the media would make it politically correct to prosecute Blair, the courts would exercise their independence and prosecute Blair.
Beyond that, I mean, there's a very powerful argument you're making, you know, but I mean, I'd like to try and defend the BBC here, you know, but I can't. It's difficult for me to do that right now. But my overall question beyond all that is that if we can't kind of get rid of, you know, our rulers, you know, be it the gentleman who's in charge of the United States right now or the lady who's in charge of the United Kingdom, rather the ladies and gentlemen elsewhere, then how can we call ourselves parliamentary democracies? This is the major issue, isn't it?
When Gandhi came to England in 1932, the reporters eagerly asked him, "Well, Mr. Gandhi, what do you think of civilization?" He said, "I think it would be a very good idea." Well, the same applies to democracy. Westminster pretends to be the mother of the parliaments. The truth is the current Conservative government, of course it's going to the country soon, but was elected with actually the support of 24% of the electorate. On a first-past-post system, they got 36% of the vote and a 58% turnout. 24% of the electorate supported them. Now, that's not democracy. And the joke is, of course, that, you know, the House of Lords has got the biggest legislative chamber in the world outside the Chinese Communist Party, with 900 unelected lords moderating the law. And, of course, the media, as the professor pointed out, very uncritical. And I'm afraid the BBC is now very much an instrument of the state, terrified of being independent and critical in case it, too, gets the job, as indeed it did do, don't forget, in the Iraq War, when it was reported by Andrew Gilligan that the weapons of mass destruction story had been sexed up. He was removed, the chair of the BBC was removed, the director general was removed, all by Blair's press spokesman, Alistair Campbell. So the BBC since then has been terrified, but too critical of governments, and I'm afraid. And most of the media, of course, have been part of the same predominant socioeconomic elite that run the Britain and, of course, don't scrutinize too closely the activities of their prime minister or indeed their past prime minister. So no surprise there that they're not recovering.
Hugh Mephatisaris, I mean, Sputnik's often been accused of sort of supporting Brexit or something. I personally did about five programs actually supporting the other side, you know, the Remain. Mm-hmm, because my gut feeling, I'm not a super politician or anything, just a humble commentator. My feeling is that a membership of the European Court of Justice is a good thing, you know, not a bad thing. Another pan-European
institutions. It's a good thing because that's right. And the European Court of Human Rights, of course, one of the founding members was Britain in the post-war period, writing the articles for it and so on. So, yes, I mean, the notion that you can operate without international cooperation over law, both in terms of war and peace, but also in terms of the environment, in terms of trade, in a civilized world, you have to cooperate and you have to give, you know, you have to make concessions, you have to share consensus. Yeah. And the fact that we're pretending that aggression, something, is merely international, it doesn't apply in Britain, it is a nonsense, of course. Yeah. There's no moral support, no moral dimension.
And I mean, as far as declaring wars go, I mean, you know, it seems to me a good thing that Britain is at least morally obliged to ask permission from another body, you know, or not permission, but to seek agreement.
Well, that's right. British law should respect, particularly the UN, and that, of course, was exactly what didn't happen with the Iraq War when they couldn't get the resolution through the Security Council. They said, "Oh, well, we'll just bloody ignore them anyway, and then we'll pretend it was for these reasons."
Yeah.
It's clear that they had intended for some years.
Well, like in Syria a couple of days ago when the Russians vetoed the resolution on Syria, the U.S. bombed.
Yeah.
So
they bombed it anyway.
Exactly. It's the Wild West. Yeah. Is international law with a Wild West flavor.
Yeah. I'd like to just, final comments, bring it back to this particular gentleman, Tony Blair. And what the precedent, there is no precedent we've established apart from Charles I, not quite the same thing. In fact, no British Prime Minister has been sacked because of a decision to go to war. So there is, in fact, immunity, isn't there? And it's eternal. Tony Blair will never go to court for this.
There is impunity.
Impunity,
and there's, of course, a misuse of the concept of immunity.
Yeah.
But I think we should go back to the text of the judgment of the Kuala Lumpur Tribunal back in 2014. And Richard Falk, who was one of the judges at that tribunal, wrote a long piece on Bush and Blair being declared guilty after 2 years of investigation by the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Commission.
Yeah.
This, of course, is a private initiative. This is a people's tribunal. And that follows the tradition of the Bertrand Russell Tribunal at the time of the Vietnam War. I think it's very important to go back to people's tribunals and for the media to give people's tribunals also publicity, because most people who are listening to this program probably do not know that there was such a thing as a Kuala Lumpur tribunal and probably do not know that people's tribunals already in two occasions have found both Bush and Blair guilty, of course, in absentia.
Wow. Okay. Just give us some good news, please, both of you. Tell us everything's going to be all right.
Well, I would like to give you something positive on the future of Blair. And the only positive thing I can say is that on the court of moral judgment, Blair is a war criminal. Most people in Britain believe that he has no future place in any public office, despite his attempts to come back. I think the stain of history will be that, you know, he will be judged to be a war criminal. And that, in a sense, is the most important court of all.
Yeah.
But I don't hold any hope that he's going to be found legally guilty of war crimes tribunal. I think he will be prevented from going there. And, but, you know, the big picture is that we will, history will judge him. And history has already judged him, which is why he's constantly going around pretending to do good works, when in fact he's earning an estimated £100 million since his activities are advising all sorts of dodgy administrations around the world, because he knows how to do it.
Professor Zayas, last words.
I fully agree with you, and if we succeed in destroying his reputation so that he is perceived, Pinochet up to 1999 had been perceived, even in his own country, as an important personality, as a leader. And it took the decision of the House of Lords, and it took the humiliation of the whole procedure and his return to Chile to effectively destroy his image. If the historical image of Tony Blair and the historical image of George W. Bush is destroyed, and henceforth we look at them as unconvicted war criminals, that in itself would be a step forward for morality.
Thank you very much. Former Labour MEP Hugh Kerr and Professor of Law Alfred de Zayas, retired senior lawyer with the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Secretary of the UN Human Rights Committee, Chief of the Petitions Department at OHCHR, for giving us, I think, a pretty actually realistic picture of what's going on as regards Mr. Tony Blair. Thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. Tune in again next week. Goodbye.